Summary.
Listening activity number 15. You are going to hear a talk about the tall ships race in Britain. As you listen, complete the notes below by writing no more than three words in the spaces provided.
In July 1956, a fleet of 21 sailing ships from 11 countries raced each other from Torbay in Devon to Lisbon. The ships had been converted from cargo carrying to sail training ships. However, their future seemed uncertain, and the purpose of the gathering was to mark the passing of the age of the sail. What happened instead was that the sailing ships refused to say goodbye, and 2 years later they raced again, and the fleet was even larger. It was then that the title The Tall Ships was given to them, and the name remains today. The original organisers, the Sail Training Ship International Race Committee, now called the Sail Training Association, saw that a new international movement had begun, adventure training under sail. As race succeeded race, it became clear that the events had more to do with bringing adventure and widening the horizons of young people than of commemorating the passing of sail. Now, sail training ships began to be specially built, and young people from all walks of life wanted to participate. Now, to compete, a vessel has to satisfy just three requirements. It has to have a minimum waterline length of 9.09 metres. Half its crew must be between the ages of 16 and 25, and its principal means of propulsion must be a sail. Since 1972, the race has been sponsored by Cutty Sark Scots Whisky, and it has started to attract huge crowds of spectators. In 1984, more than 250,000 people lined the River Mersey in Liverpool to watch the fleet set off. And in 1986, 2 million spectators joined Her Majesty Queen Elizabeth at Newcastle upon Tyne to watch the parade. 1989 was the year that the spectacular Cutty Sark Tall Ships Race started from London. A grand fleet of up to 100 vessels gathered on the River Thames near Tower Bridge on Tuesday the 4th of July. The only thing that the racing yachts, ancient and modern, had in common was their young crews. Few were expert sailors, and the majorities were strangers to the sea and to each other. Between Tuesday the 4th of July, when the fleet began to assemble, and Saturday the 8th of July, when the ships took part in a grand parade of sail down the River Thames, vessels were berthed on either side of Tower Bridge. Some were moored in the Pool of London, opposite the Tower of London, while others were moored to the east of Tower Bridge. Smaller vessels were accommodated in St. Catherine's Dock. Many of the larger ships were open to the public. It was an amazing and historic spectacle as the ships sailed slowly up the River Thames.
Listening activity number 16. You are going to hear a conversation about using recorded delivery and registered post. As you listen, complete the notes below by writing no more than three words in the spaces provided.
Tom, where are you going?
To the post office. I'm going to send some packets to Leeds. Do you know the best way to send them?
Well, if your need is for a record of posting and delivery rather than compensation for loss, recorded delivery is particularly suitable for sending documents and papers of little or no monetary value.
Well, what can we send for recorded delivery?
All kinds of inland postal packets except parcels, airway and railway letters and parcels. The service does not apply to mail for the Irish Republic.
I see. How do I post them?
You should get a certificate of posting form from the container in the post office and follow the instructions shown on the reverse. The certificate will be your record of posting.
Can I send anything in the post?
No, you can't. You must not send banknotes, currency notes, and some valuable things because there is no special handling in the post. recorded delivery mail is carried with the ordinary unregistered post, and there is no special security treatment.
How do we use recorded delivery?
Well, when your letter or packet is delivered, it is signed for by the recipient and a record is kept by the post office. The post office does not undertake to deliver recorded delivery or any other mail to the addressee in person, but to the address shown. You can obtain confirmation of delivery by completing an advice of delivery form either at the time of posting or later. This form will be signed by a post office official, not by the addressee of the recipient. A fee is payable, which is lower if the form is handed in at the time of posting.
Is there any compensation for loss?
Well, compensation is limited. Compensation may be paid for loss or damage, but will not be paid for money or any other inadmissible item. If you want a speedy service for articles of value with extra security of handling en route, and wish to have compensation in the event of loss or damage, you should use registered post.
What can we send if we use registered post?
Any first-class letter or packet, except airway letter or railway letter.
How do we post? I mean, what should we do?
Well, you should make sure that the packet is made up in a strong cover, and then it is fastened with wax, gum or other adhesive substance. Hand the packet to the post office counter clerk, together with the cost of postage and the registration fee. Do not post it in the posting box. Make sure that the fee paid is adequate to cover the value of the content. The counter clerk will give you a certificate of posting, which he has initiated with the date stamped.
Is there any special security for the registered post?
Yes. All registered mail receives special security treatment. Packing is very important because registration is not in itself a safeguard against damage. The contents of registered packets must be adequately packed.
How do we pack then? Do we have to use special envelope?
Yes, you have to send the articles in one of the registered letter envelopes sold by the post office. These envelopes are already stamped for first-class postage and have the minimum registration fee.
What about the compensation?
Compensation will not be paid for the following articles, such as banknotes, currency notes, trading stamps, coupons, and some valuable things, unless they are enclosed in one of the registered letter envelopes sold by the post office.
I see. How does it deliver?
The recipient on delivery signs for your registered mail. The post office does not undertake to deliver registered or any other mail to the addressee in person, but to the address shown. You can obtain confirmation of delivery by paying an additional fee and completing an advice of delivery form, either at the time of posting or later. If you require the recipient's signature on the advice of delivery, the form must be handed in at the time of posting. Otherwise, a post office official will sign the certificate. The advice of delivery fee is lower if the form is handed in at the time of posting.
Thank you very much for all this useful information.
Listening activity number 17. You are going to hear the first part of a lecture on American culture and American customs. As you listen, complete the notes below by writing no more than three words in the spaces provided.
Well, last week we talked about American education, and today I'm going to discuss American values, characteristics, personal habits and courtesies. Keep in mind as you are listening to this lecture that your goal is to understand, not to emulate or judge. Just briefly, I'd like to mention that there is a remarkable ethnic diversity in the United States. The population of the USA is about 260 million. 73% of the American population is white. 12% is African-American, 8% Hispanic, 3% Asian or Pacific Islanders, and less than 1% American Indian or Eskimo. Many Americans resent generalizations being made about them because Americans see themselves as very unique and individualistic. On the other hand, Americans tend to lump foreigners together into one lot and condescendingly view foreigners as people who are not as intelligent or sensible as Americans. Despite Americans' dislike of generalizations and their ethnocentric point of view, it becomes evident that they are indeed American. Americans value individualism, independence, informality, directness, punctuality, achievement, and competition. Individualism is probably the most highly esteemed value in the American culture and an important key to understanding American behavior. In the historical development of the country, individuality was crucial for survival. If you asked Americans to characterize the ideal person, they would probably use adjectives such as autonomous, independent, and self-reliant. Persons tend to be viewed as individuals rather than as representatives of a family or a group. Here are some examples of how this value affects behaviors. 1. If a group of friends go to a restaurant, everyone wants to pay their own way. In other words, they want to have separate checks and not be someone's guest. 2. In friendships, which seem to initially develop more quickly in the US than in other cultures, the Americans may feel uncomfortable if you give them more help than they need. This is a tendency to draw back and see dependency as weakness. In some ways, the stress on the individual rather than the family or group has led to a more informal society. Sometimes this lack of formality is viewed by members of other cultures as a sign of lack of respect. But that is not the intention in the American value system. This informality is even more predominant on the university campus than in other segments of society. Some ways in which you might see this value expressed in behaviors are 1. You will generally be on a first-name basis with other students, in spite of any age differences. 2. Dress is very informal on campus. 3. Language is informal and sometimes confusing. Phrases like "see you later" and "drop by any time" are not meant literally. They are informal ways of saying goodbye. Americans are direct. Honesty and frankness are more important to Americans than saving face. They may bring up impolite conversation topics which you may find embarrassing, too controversial, or even offensive. Americans are quick to get to the point and do not spend much time on formal social amenities. This directness encourages Americans to talk over disagreements and to try to patch up misunderstandings themselves, rather than ask a third party to mediate disputes. It is particularly interesting to see what behaviors have culturally become associated with straightforwardness. 1. A firm handshake somehow has come to be interpreted as a sign of sincerity. 2. Looking at a person when you speak to him or her gives an indication of honesty. 3. In a question of honesty versus politeness, honesty wins. It is considered better to refuse graciously than to accept an invitation and not go. 4. You will be taken at your word. If you refuse food the first time it is offered, to be polite, it may not be offered again. An American will not know that your initial refusal is politeness. Great value is attached to time in the US. Punctuality is considered an important attribute. As with all values, there are different rules of acceptability in different cultures. In the US, you should be present for school or business appointments at the exact time agreed upon. In social appointments, you can arrive 10 to 15 minutes after the agreed upon time, without giving offense. If you are invited somewhere for dinner and are more than 15 minutes late, you will need to offer an apology and an explanation. A phone call explaining you have been detained and will be late will save face for you and patience for the other person. Americans also value achievement and competition. the American style of friendly joking or banter, of getting the last word in, and the quick and witty reply, are subtle forms of competition. Although such behaviour is natural to Americans, you may find it overbearing or disagreeable. Americans are obsessed with records of achievement in sports, and sports awards are often displayed in their homes. Also, sometimes books and movies are judged not so much on quality, but on how many copies are sold, or on how many dollars of profit are realized.
Listening activity number 18. Now listen to the second part of the lecture. As you listen, complete the notes below by writing no more than 3 words in the spaces provided.
Many typically American characteristics, individualism, self-reliance, informality, punctuality, and directness are a result of those values mentioned earlier. Other national traits could also be identified, however. 1. Americans cooperate. Although often competitive, Americans also have a good sense of teamwork and cooperate with others to achieve a goal. 2. Americans are friendly, but in their own way. In general, friendships among Americans tend to be shorter and more casual than friendships among people from other cultures. This has something to do with American mobility and the fact that Americans do not like to be dependent on other people. Americans also tend to compartmentalize friendships, having friends at work, family friends, friends on the softball team, etc. 3. Americans ask a lot of questions, some of which may to you seem pointless, uninformed, or elementary. Someone you have just met may ask you very personal questions. No impertinence is intended. The questions usually grow out of a genuine interest. 4. Americans tend to be internationally naive. Many Americans are not very knowledgeable about international geography or world affairs. They may ask uninformed questions about current events and may display ignorance of world geography. Because the US is not surrounded by many other nations, some Americans tend to ignore the world. 5. Silence makes Americans nervous. Americans are not comfortable with silence. They would rather talk about the weather than deal with silence in a conversation. 6. Americans are open and usually eager to explain. If you do not understand certain behavior or want to know what makes Americans tick, do not hesitate to ask questions. Just as values and traits differ somewhat from one culture to another, so do the personal habits associated with good manners and courtesy. While very often there does not seem to be any particular reason why a particular way of doing something is considered good manners, observing these cultural rules will make Americans more comfortable with you, and therefore you with them. It is, of course, impossible to cover all the possibilities here. If you are unsure in a situation, just ask. Americans like to be helpful. 1. Queuing up or lining up is essential. Courtesy requires that you do not push from behind, stand next to the person being helped, or cut into a line. If you should accidentally bump someone, you should say, "Excuse me." 2. Americans blow their noses into a tissue. Spitting, clearing phlegm, or sniffing as from a cold are considered rude. 3. It is considered poor manners to slurp, chew noisily, or open your mouth while chewing. 4. Questions are seen as a good way of getting acquainted, but questions about a person's age, financial affairs, cost of clothing or personal belongings, religious affiliations and sex life are considered too personal for questioning, except between very close friends. 5. Men generally do not hold hands or link arms in public with other men. This is somewhat more acceptable between women and quite common between men and women. Now, a few words about personal safety. Unfortunately, in the US, one must be aware of crimes. It is wise to be especially careful until you are familiar with the community in which you live. Remember that good judgment and common sense can significantly reduce chances of having an unpleasant and perhaps harmful experience. Basic safety rules include the following. 1. Do not walk alone at night. 2. When you leave your room, apartment, or automobile, make sure that all doors are locked and all windows are secured. 3. Do not carry too much cash or wear jewelry of great value. 4. Never accept a ride from a stranger. Do not hitchhike and do not pick up hitchhikers. 5. Be careful of purses and wallets, especially in crowded metropolitan areas where there may be purse snatchers and pickpockets. 6. If a robber threatens you, at home or on the street, try not to resist unless you feel that your life is in danger and you must fight or run away. Give up your valuables as calmly as you can and observe as much as possible about the robber to tell the police when you report the crime. A final note. Keep an open mind. Don't judge what you see as right or wrong, but make it a challenge to try to understand the variety of American behaviors which you may observe. You certainly do not have to participate in something you disagree with, but you can try to understand it. This will help you build an attitude of intelligent and liberated respect for cultures, both your own and others.
Listening activity number 19. You are going to hear a talk on two famous American presidents. As you listen, fill the missing information in the notes below. Now listen to the talk.
John F. Kennedy and Abraham Lincoln lived in different times and had very different family and educational backgrounds. Kennedy lived in the 20th century, while Lincoln lived in the 19th century. Kennedy was born in 1917, whereas Lincoln was born more than 100 years earlier, in 1809. As for their family backgrounds, Kennedy came from a rich family, but Lincoln's family was not wealthy. Because Kennedy came from a wealthy family, he was able to attend expensive private schools. He graduated from Harvard University. Lincoln, on the other hand, had only 1 year of formal schooling. In spite of his lack of normal schooling, he became a well-known lawyer. He taught himself law by reading law books. Lincoln was, in other words, a self-educated man. In spite of these differences in Kennedy and Lincoln's backgrounds, some interesting similarities between the two men are evident. In fact, many books have been written about the strange coincidences in the lives of these two men. For example, take their political careers. Lincoln began his political career as a US congressman. Similarly, Kennedy also began his political career as a congressman. Lincoln was elected to the US House of Representatives in 1847. Kennedy was elected to the House in 1947. They went to the Congress just 100 years apart. Another interesting coincidence is that each man was elected President of the United States in a year ending with the number 60. Lincoln was elected President in 1860, and Kennedy was elected in 1960. Furthermore, both men were President during years of civil unrest in the country. Lincoln was president during the American Civil War. During Kennedy's term of office, civil unrest took the form of civil rights demonstrations. Another striking similarity between the two men was that, as you probably know, neither lived to complete his term in office. Lincoln and Kennedy were both assassinated while in office. Kennedy was assassinated in Dallas, Texas, after only 1,000 days in office. Lincoln was assassinated in 1865, a few days after the end of the American Civil War. It's rather curious to note that both presidents were shot while they were sitting next to their wives. These are only a few examples of the uncanny and unusual similarities between the destinies of these two American men, who had a tremendous impact on the social and political life of the United States and the imagination of the American people. Listening activity number 20. You're going to hear a lecture on American history. As you listen, fill the missing information in the notes below. Now, listen to the lecture.
The American Civil War was fought over 140 years ago. It began in 1861 and lasted until 1865. The American Civil War resulted in the death of 800,000 Americans. What caused this terrible civil war between the North and the South? Well, historians believe that there were many causes of the war. One of the important causes of the war was the friction between the North and the South over the issue of slavery. The Southern way of life and the Southern economy were based on the use of slave labour. For almost 250 years before the Civil War, the economy of the South depended on the use of black slaves. The slaves were used to plant and pick cotton and tobacco. Cotton and tobacco were the main crops grown in the South. Most Southerners did not think it was wrong to own, buy, or sell black slaves like farm animals. Slavery was, in fact, the foundation of the entire economy and way of life in the South. This was not the situation in the North. The Northern economy did not depend on the use of slave labour. Why not? Well, in the South, there were many large cotton plantations that used hundreds of black slaves. In the North, however, there were smaller farms. The Northern farmers planted many different kinds of crops, not just cotton or tobacco. The Northerners did not need slaves, since their farms were smaller than most of the Southern plantations. In fact, many Northerners were so opposed to slavery that they wanted to end slavery completely. The Northern attitude against slavery made the Southerners angry. So, for many years before the war, there was constant friction between the North and the South over this issue. This friction eventually led to war. There was other friction too, as I said before, between the North and the South. There were, in other words, other causes of conflict between the North and the South. One involved the growth of industry in the North. While the South remained an agricultural area, the North became more and more industrialized. As industry increased in the North, it brought more people and greater wealth to the Northern states. As a result, many Southerners began to fear Northern political and economic domination. Because of this fear, many Southerners believed that the South should leave the Union and that they should form their own country. In 1860, the Southerners decided it was time to leave the Union when Abraham Lincoln became President of the United States. Lincoln, as you may know, was against slavery. The people of the South were afraid that their way of life and their economic system were in danger with Lincoln in the presidency. Consequently, the Southern states decided to secede from the Union. In other words, they wanted to break away from the North and form a separate country. In 1861, South Carolina seceded, and by June of 1861, 11 Southern states had seceded and established a new country.